Okay, it's your turn. Let's take some phone calls next with Michael Heiser. Man, great subject matter tonight. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Michael, in the portion of you that believes in extraterrestrial life, do you believe it might be dimensional, like Jacques Vallée believes, or planetary?
I prefer the dimensional view. I just think it's more coherent.
Oh, really? Now tell me why.
Well, I think that, how can I say this? I think that the dimensional view, what it has going for it is it can account for the physical stuff. Okay, let's just put it that way. It can account for physical beings, physical encounters, physical craft. I mean, a lot of people think dimensional or, you know, quote-unquote spiritual world or something like that means that it's not something material. That isn't the case. It just means, you know, we've got, you know, an interdimensionality going on. So it accounts for that. It also accounts for situations that sort of defy what you would expect if you have I hate to use the word simple, but simple life form that, again, you know, has to eat, drink, reproduce, and that sort of thing. You know, to be really honest, we don't really have scientific evidence, at least that's public, at least that's real in that sense, and that's important. It counts for, you know, extraterrestrial life, intelligent extraterrestrial life, but we do have, I think, mounting scientific evidence for other dimensions, that sort of thing. So I right now I just think that there's more weight that goes on that side. Plus, I think when you get into the religious areas, whether it be biblical studies or other religions that talk about the spiritual world, this other plane of reality, that fits in again with dimensionality. I just think it has all. It covers all those bases in a way better than the other view does.
Okay, let's go to the phones, Michael. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Dwight from Kamloops, B.C.
Sure thing.
A question for your guest there. Is it possible that the Majestic 12 is still operating? Because I got a little quick story here. I ran into a guy in Clearwater, Minnesota, that said that he'd actually met some guys, and I don't know. He looked pretty sane, but you never know nowadays. He said he'd met some, and when he did run into him, talked to him for quite a while, and he said that they were reptilians.
I would answer the question this way. Whatever's being covered up, whatever the answer is, there is someone just by necessity that is controlling that information. I mean, logical necessity drives you to conclude that information of that nature, whether, again, it's human, extraterrestrial, some combination thereof, that is information that needs to be and is. When I say needs to be, I'm not making a moral judgment here, but that information would have to be controlled by someone. And so my answer would be, yeah, I think there's some group or some small body of people out there who are controlling the information, whether it becomes public or not. I don't know if they're called Majestic 12, and it's really sort of a minor point. Who cares what they're called? But the information is still under control.
Well, this guy, he was scared to death, and he said he kept moving around so they couldn't find him. So, you know, it just kind of makes the guy wonder, you know, if they are still out there, you know.
Well, whatever the answer is, someone has the information, and someone is not being forthcoming with it. Okay, thanks.
Okay, appreciate that. Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Jeannie.
Hey, Jeannie, where are you calling from?
Gosh, this is wonderful. I'm in Virginia.
Okay, go ahead.
Nice to meet you, George, and hi to the guest. I'm nervous. I can't remember your name.
Hello, Mike.
Okay, Mike. Gosh, all this is very fascinating. I've been up with stuff. I'm 49. I just can't absorb all the information. I just want to say, I do think, you know, the government, you know, they have to try secret stuff, and part of it's probably secret stuff, and part of it's from someplace else, and hey, maybe the crystal skulls from the show before had something to do with giving us knowledge, And maybe the weather balloons that are attached to the saucer discs, maybe the balloons are attached so that if the disc malfunctions, it won't come all the way down to the Earth, so they can't find the parts.
Well, you never know about that.
Well, and I love this show, and can I just mention that here in Virginia, I'm kind of in shock and awe. We actually have avian flu going on in the Shenandoah Valley.
How extensive is it?
They have instructed not to sell, I think it's chickens and roosters, not to move their feed, their remains, or their, you know.
Okay, I'll tell you what, let's use that for another day if you want to check back with us, because we don't have that much time with Michael this hour. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George, how you doing? Really glad to be on and be able to reach you, and I've been listening to Coast to Coast for so very long.
Well, thank you, sir.
How you doing there, Mike? This question kind of is posed for both of you, and it ties into here, and it ties into another show, and another show from beyond, and probably a few others. But one that I know George would definitely remember, I heard you say, Mike, that you've been listening to for about 10 years. So I know George remembers the Montauk Project.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, Mike, earlier you were talking about the Anunnaki, and from what I understood over years and years of listening to Coast to Coast, the Anunnaki is the reptilian race. Now, as I think about this, I don't know if you've heard of the Montauk Project, Mike, or you know about it.
I've heard of it.
Yes, I'm pretty sure you should check into that. And you should have the person that you were talking about, Kathy, or what was her name. You should check into that. But the thing about what I'm saying is, one of the things that the fella has said that really, that I've never heard anyone on Coast to Coast in many years or anywhere in any studies, he has said in a Montauk Project show that happened a couple of weeks ago, he had mentioned that one of the things that that we use on this earth is fuel. And that the earth actually had, you know, these dinosaurs. Now, when I think about what we're going through as in ETs, and when and about religion, if, you know, life can handle, you know, the ETs, I'm still wondering about these dinosaurs. And what he has said, that the reason why we have this fuel on these dinosaurs here is because of the Anunnaki, which is the reptilian, and then something about that the Atlanteans, whatever. I don't even get into that part about why they could destroy. But I'm saying that, why can't we believe that the ETs, that there are reptilian ETs, if we have something on our earth that is reptilian, that we don't have nothing to understand, but we're just rolling with this, like we're just going with it, like it's just there. You understand what I'm saying, George? I'm saying, what are all these dinosaurs? This is something that we just use, and we just go with it. But I'm still, as my age, 31, I'm still going, what is this? You know, and how come I've never heard about this in no Bibles, no books, no Samaritans, no nothing, no none of this? This is something real ancient.
Well, John Rhodes was just on the program, a crypto hunter that he is, believes in an incredible array of underground reptilians that he believes have been on this planet for a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm familiar with him. I mean, for my sake, I just need something other than, you know, anecdotal evidence for that. I mean, what I can say in literary terms, in terms of literature, there are with the Anunnaki, let's just take them. There are certain, how can I say, pretty peripheral or sort of circumstantial connections between references to the Anunnaki and Mesopotamian texts and things that would get things that would be called serpentine motifs in those texts. But you don't actually have a description in Sumerian Mesopotamian literature of the Anunnaki. But some try to make that correlation, some try to make that argument. Again, I just need a little bit more for that in terms of literary terms. And in terms of just reality, I mean, I would need hard evidence that is the case.
Michael, what got you interested in all this? I mean, like you say, you've got a full-time job. How did you get into this?
Well, as far as, you know, UFO stuff, let's try to narrow it to that. I was always interested, you know, as a young person. In junior high, I'd go to the school library and read all the books on UFOs. And that's a familiar story, you know, with a lot of your guests.
Yeah. And myself included.
Yeah, there you go. It wasn't until 1997, though, that I got seriously interested in terms of doing what I would call substantial research and even, you know, getting involved through the facade, through writing that, just putting my ideas out there. And that was, I listened to the CNN press conference on the 50th anniversary of Roswell. And when I heard Colonel Haynes, I can just still remember it clear as day. When I heard Colonel Haynes answer a reporter's question, a reporter asked, well, you know, how can the bodies be crash dummies when by the Air Force's own admission, the crash dummies only came along in the early 50s?
Mm-hmm.
I expected Colonel Haynes to say, oh, you know, you're right, I misspoke, and, you know, let me try to answer that. But instead he goes, well, that's right, sir. And the reporter said, well, how does that work? And he said, well, we think that the witnesses to the Roswell event underwent time compression.
Time compression.
And as soon as I heard that, I thought, holy cow, they really want people to believe something else other than what they're saying, because this is so ridiculous that nobody would latch on to this. So this there must be some, either this is just like hopelessly dumb, or they want people to sort of go the other direction and realize that they're being lied to right here, right now, in this press conference, that this is just incoherent. And it just intrigued me that why would they do that? Why would they put out a third explanation and have the third one just include something this weird?
One of my favorite UFO stories has to do with the Richard Nixon when he was president. One more year to go before he ended up resigning. And he took Jackie Gleason golfing, and then he took him to Homestead Air Force Base in Florida and apparently showed him extraterrestrials. Witnesses who knew Jackie well said he was obsessed with UFOs. And when Nixon said, all right, let me show you something, it absolutely changed the rest of his life. And apparently this happened. It was an incredible story. You've heard of it?
Yeah, I've heard the story. You know, it'd be nice if you could, you know, if we could somehow, you know, quantify that. You know, and you never know. I mean, you know, something could have gotten written down that just hasn't been brought to public or whatever. But, you know, that's always what I'm sort of looking for. But I like the story, too. It's interesting, and I've heard it several times, and pretty consistent in terms of the versions of it, too.
I wish Jackie were alive today. I'd have him on a program.
Yeah, I'm sure you would.
And he'd end it by saying, and away we go. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. How are you today?
Good. Thank you, sir.
All right. I wanted to ask your guest here. Let me roll my window up. I'm in a plant now.
Okay.
But this is Tommy calling from Chino.
All right.
And he spoke a few minutes back about dimensions, other dimensions, how we didn't actually have any proof that there was other dimensions, but they had some sort of proof, but not legitimate.
No, I would, let me correct you a little bit. I would say what I said was there's much more evidence for that, for other dimensions, than there are the other hypothesis that we have beings coming from another planet in this dimension.
Okay,
I think that's actually the better case.
Let me explain to you what happened to me in 87, and let's see if this tie in with it. I'll be real, real brief with it. I just bought a brand new car. It was an 87 Escort. I bought it brand new. I told my wife, I said, I'm going to run to the store right quick, and I'll be right back. So as I was coming up on the red light, I was fumbling with the radio or something, you know, checking out my new car and stuff. And I ran that red light, and it was another car coming the opposite direction. This car and I went right through each other. And we went through each other at such a point where I could smell the passenger on the other side of the car. I could smell this guy's breath. And I heard him say, oh, you know, blink, I ain't going to say the word. But we went right through, this car passed right through me. I'm not kidding you. And the next thing I know, I was turning into the station, the service station, on the other side of the street. And my thought was, my way of thinking on that is some kind of way, I always kid my wife with it. I said, you know, I died at 87. I think I was knocked into some other dimension or something, because I know this car, we went right through each other at a point where I smelled the passenger's breath. And about a month later, I was listening to art, and I heard a lady say the same thing about a train had went through their car.
Yeah, and we've had so many calls about that with people.
And my hair stood up on the back of my neck when I heard that. And I just wanted to run that by you guys. George, it's an honor to be able to talk to you anytime I get through. And I love the show.
And by the way, you said you smelled his breath. Obviously,
yeah.
It didn't smell like alcohol.
You know, it wasn't a stinky breath or anything like that. It was just that the guy, the passenger, yelled out, oh! And as we went through each other, I actually smelled the guy's breath and heard his voice right there on my, you know, I smelled his breath.
I love it. Oh, all right, Michael, there's a case of obviously another dimension.
Yeah, if it happened, I mean, as he describes it, then there'd have, you know, again, I'm not a scientist, I'm not a cosmologist or anything like that, but, you know, I'll tell you what, I would be interested in if you had somebody on, like, you know, Michio Kaku, somebody who does this, you should try to remember that story for that person and see what they would say.
To see how it happens, yeah. Absolutely. I mean, and I've seen episodes, too, where I've seen things slow down in my head, and they look like they have.
My wife actually had something happen to her. It wasn't that, you know, that dramatic, but she was driving somewhere, and through a set of circumstances that she was sort of forced to, you know, and going at a good rate of speed, you know, 50, 60 miles an hour, she was sort of forced to go toward what to her looked very obviously like a you know, a monster pothole. And she was sort of waiting, you know, for the car to hit it and lose an axle or bottom out or something. But she said, essentially, you know, she just felt the car sort of, you know, move beyond it. I mean, it was hard for her to describe, but it was something that she had to come home and, you know, she told me about it, and we just kind of looked at each other, and boy, I don't know what to make of that.
No, that is incredible. Hey, by the way, I promised her, she's got a new internet radio show going, right?
Oh, no, that's not mine. I think you're thinking of Karen Dolan.
Richard Dolan's,
yeah,
that's right.
Thinking of Karen,
exactly.
Yeah.
You were all up there at the same time. Okay, great. Stay with us, Michael. We'll be back. We're going to take some final phone calls in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, do watch Larry King tomorrow on CNN, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time, and it'll be 8 p.m. on the Central Time. That's how it all works out, doesn't it? We're going to talk about Roswell UFOs. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to meeting Larry, of course. You know, he's one of those who started late-night talk radio. What an evolution. Started off with a fellow in New York by the name of Long John Neble, and he would do some of this, too. And then Larry King took over and just captured the late-night audience. And then he was followed by Art Bell and then me, and then who knows comes in after that. What an evolution in the history of overnight talk radio. It's just great to be in company with all of them, but that'll be fun. But watch the program, and I'll be putting on my clothes and my new outfit, and I'll go do my thing. I'm not shaving my mustache, though. And what's up for speaking engagements, Mr. Heiser?
Oh, you know, I really don't have anything in this area, really, to the end of the calendar year.
Nothing.
No, I actually do maybe three or four these kinds of things a year. So, you know, I go when I'm asked, but, you know, I don't get asked that frequently. So, you know, it's just a limited part of life, but I sort of maintain my own activity level in it.
Okay, well, let's finish it up and take final calls for you. First-time caller line, you're up with Mike Heiser. Hi there.
Yes, Mr. Heiser. My name's Todd from Tempe. I have read Philip J. Glass's documentation of the Harry Truman MJ-12 document where he matched the signature with an existing signature in the Truman Library. And I don't know who the originator of this document is, if it was Moore, or I'd just like to ask you if that's part of your research, the MJ-12 Harry Truman document.
Well, I mean, it is, but I didn't analyze anything to do with the signatures. I mean, Stan Friedman, I think, has done a decent job of, showing how the signatures could be comparable. But my work didn't have anything to do with handwriting styles or anything like that.
Yeah, well, what Glass did was he showed that this Truman signature was photocopied, and if there's an enlargement process that happens anytime you photocopy something.
Right, I know he and Stan Friedman have gone back and forth on that, but I mean, what I was doing concerns stylistic patterns of writing that just emerge essentially from your head, unconsciously or subconsciously, that a computer can detect these patterns, and once you get a list of known patterns, you match them against an unknown document and see what you get.
So are you a full-blown skeptic? Because I know Glass and Friedman were kind of adversaries, so...
No, I accept the existence of MJ-12. I think the UFO phenomenon deserves a real study, deserves, to be considered, without ridicule. I mean, I just don't think that it gets the time it deserves from the people that could really make a contribution. I think it's a shame.
No, not a skeptic. Eyes wide open, I guess. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
George, hi. How you doing tonight?
Good. Fine. Thank you. Where are you calling from, sir?
This is Nicholas from Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay, Nicholas. Go ahead.
And I used to listen to you. I live in Beaverton, Oregon on 1190 KEX.
Yep.
And that's not too sure where your signal's coming in from. I've only been here for 4 days, but...
You're coming out of WCBM.
WCBM. Okay. Kind of had a statement and a question inside of a statement, so to speak, but whether your guest is like Mr. Heiser tonight or Alex Jones... have either of you off the record, are you experiencing any outrage? Because it seems lately all I'm hearing is doom and gloom, whether it be repealing the Second Amendment, going for our guns, the UFO cover-up. It just seems like there's absolutely nothing but lie after lie after lie from this government.
It does appear to be.
My country, but the government is like an infected tooth now. It seems like it's got to go. And I don't know if you experience any outrage or... people that, at these conferences, are they trying to put something together? What's out there for us?
there is a segment of ufology, let me just put it that way. There is a wing on the ufological spectrum that is quite politically involved, and, I mean, to use current political terminology would be on the left wing. I mean, me politically, I describe myself as a political atheist. I think that both parties pretty much, let me put it this way, there's a reason why big business contributes lots and lots and lots of money to both parties. I don't think it takes too much imagination, but I'm in favor of democracy. I agree with Winston Churchill that democracy is the worst form of government, compared to all the others. It's better than all the others. It's the worst that we have compared to all the others. So I'm a believer in democracy. I'm not an anarchist or anything like that. But, I wish more people would get involved and, try to affect change. Because it's happened in the past. People can affect change. They really can shake things up. But, people just need to believe they can do that.
Okay, how about that? And here we are now, Michael, with another fast blast from Hillary Clinton out of New York. This time she says...
Well, she's glued.
She says, that wasn't nice, George. It really is me, Hillary. And to prove it, I'll call in tomorrow night with a Lincoln bedroom ghost story.
There you go.
Bill spent the night in there with me once, Whoever it is, pretty darn good, I tell you.
They get clever points.
I love it. And she said a few other things I cannot read on the air. Sorry, Hillary. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello there. This is Randy from Phoenix.
Hey, Randy. Boy, you've got a big pallet factory fire out there, don't you?
Yes. It's finally out.
Good.
But it was spectacular. You could see the glow for miles away.
My gosh. Okay. Yes. Thanks, Randy. Go ahead.
Anyway, I knew the base commander for the 509th, and also he was commander of the 1st Missile Command, and that was General Dean Barker. He and I worked together around the Tesla files. I've called in the past, long time ago. I did work with President Reagan.
Okay.
Started investigating the Tesla files. Anyway, as to what happened at Roswell, first of all, no, it was not a Nazi spy plane that they were working on. No, it was a real UFO. There was at least, there was eight huge
I didn't say it was a biplane
that they put in.
I didn't exclude anti-gravity from it.
First of all, there is no such thing as anti-gravity. It's
that's the common terminology. I realize it's imprecise, so on and so forth. So go ahead.
Oh, yeah, finish your story and then tell us how you know all this.
12 papers, which I was happened to actually see when they first made public, was that part of it is true, part of it is false. But what's really interesting is the numbers and the punctuation that they used, which was like a secret code, much like what the FBI used in the Tesla file. You had to actually go to an old F-time FBI agent to actually explain what was really going on.
Why are some true, some are not?
Some of the people in the MJ-12 group are real. It's been a long time since I looked at the file, and I haven't refreshed my memory for many years.
Okay, now let me ask you about Roswell, we can. Why do you believe that it's true? What proof do you have?
Because I knew Dean. Dean and I worked together. Dean was one of the five people during World War II who could go anywhere in the government. He was a fixer. And matter of fact, the reason why I got to know him is when I started doing the research on Tesla, they said you should really get to know this guy.
Now, what was Dean's last name?
Barker. He was commander of the 509th. He was the first commander.
All right, and are you familiar with his name, Michael?
Yeah, but what the question in my mind is, why would he share information with you?
Because we worked together. Because they were pumping me for information because of all the work I did.
I mean, were you there in 47?
No, I was not. I wasn't even born. I was born in 48.
You were born in 48?
Yes. I didn't start working for the government, DIA, until, 84.
Have you read Greg Bishop's book, Project Beta?
No, I have not.
Well, you need to read that.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, any weather balloon, that was not a weather balloon that flew up that they were complaining about, because everything that had to go through, that flew in the air, had to go through Dean.
I would agree it wasn't a weather balloon.
Are you saying this Dean Barker was around in 84?
He was the commander of the 509th.
For those many years?
Yes. Oh, yes. He died in 04.
All right. We'll check that out. What's your take on this, Mike?
I think that we need some checking on that.
I would have thought that he was out of the military way before that. But I might be wrong. Thanks for the call. Let's go to our wild card line. You're up with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
How are you, George?
Good.
Margot. And I'm calling for two reasons. Number one, my uncle was the most senior captain in the Navy, War College, etc. So I have some comments for Mike and a question for him.
All right.
But before that, I want to say thank you because you've brought me through a lot of perilous nights.
Well, you are welcome.
Well, it's helped.
Good.
And Mike, Elohim translates to three, not two, not four. You're right, it is plural. But in the original transliteration, according to a very good source.
Well, who would that be?
Arnold Fruchtenbaum. He was invited to help put together the Dead Sea Scrolls, and then after that, the other ones.
Well, I know who Arnold Fruchtenbaum is. And
you do not.
Arnold Fruchtenbaum is a good guy, but he was not on the original Scrolls team. He wasn't on any of the Scrolls team.
He was invited in.
Well, he might have been invited to look at them, but he wasn't on the team.
No, not the official team. He was the one.
There's no basis to have Elohim mean three. What I would want.
He is the one that told me that.
I know, but what I would want is an example, either in the Bible or outside the Bible, and Elohim does occur outside the Bible. I would like one instance where that's the meaning in the text.
Why don't you ask him next time you see him?
Well, I don't know if I'll see him, but I know who he is, and to me, he's a good guy, you know.
Now, my uncle was the most senior captain in the Navy. Anytime you mentioned UFO, he asked his aide-de-camp for another drink or walked out of the room.
I love it. Thanks, Margo. Hey, I can't find any information about this Dean Barker military.
No, I can't either.
I'm not sure he existed.
I mean, I
can't
find
it.
I'm willing to believe that there could be someone behind the scenes.
Well, Blanchard was part of the group 509, wasn't he?
I've heard this name Barker before.
Oh, you have?
Well, yeah, associated with Roswell, but that's a lot different than, you know, having him show up in official. Yeah, let me say it this way. It's a lot different than having any proof.
I'll see Stanton tomorrow. Well, let's ask Friedman. He knows every name associated with Roswell.
Yeah, he'll know.
Every name. Let's move next. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi. I'm wondering if Mr. Heiser has thought about the possibility that the extraterrestrials are indistinguishable from Earthlings, and how that would affect his theology, because what he has said here tonight makes me believe that he doesn't really believe the Bible, because Jesus was supposedly an extraterrestrial who was not received because they felt they knew he was an Earthling. Why can't there be dual citizenship? Why can't a person be both an extraterrestrial and an Earthling, as Jesus clearly was after the resurrection, when he ascended to his Father and told Mary not to touch him until he had done so, and then when he came back and she was allowed to touch him, he obviously had ascended.
All right, let's get his take. Thanks, Michael.
Well,
go ahead.
Jesus didn't ascend to another planet, and he didn't come from another planet, so I think you're playing with the word extraterrestrial. In terms of a being that is either, well, in Jesus' case, more than human. To me, those kinds of things are word games. I mean, Jesus, like I said, didn't come from another planet. There's nothing in the Bible that says he came from another planet. There's nothing that says he went to another planet. What I'd be interested in is what the caller meant. I don't know if he's still on the air, but what the caller meant by indistinguishable. And when he first asked the question, I was thinking he was going to go to the time travel, the human time traveler idea, which I do think is intriguing and deserves, you know, some consideration.
You think that's possible?
Yeah, I just have to trust the work of theoretical physicists here that time travel might be possible, and I know that some work has gone into this idea that UFOs are essentially, you know, our craft piloted by us. In a time travel capacity. And I don't know anything about physics or anything, you know, about the theoretical possibility of this, but it's really intriguing. I thought that's where he was going to go with the question.
Wild card line, you're up with Michael Heiser. Go ahead.
It's John from Fresno.
Yeah, John.
I'm a theologian and a linguist like yourself, Mike, and I find it very intriguing. Now, your independent study was in Akkadian and in Sumerian. And my question for you is, being versed in some of the Afro-Semitic languages like myself, do you think there might be a link between the idea of Anu or Ani in the plural sense and Ki for because and the idea of Anaki?
Boy, I mean, first of all, I would have to say no, because, you know, Sumerian is not, you know, Anunnaki sort of gets borrowed. I know there's this relationship between Sumerian and Akkadian as far as the script, but right. in terms of Anunnaki being part of the Sumerian vocabulary, Sumerian is not a Semitic language.
Correct.
So it's not. I mean, you're not going to be able to build an argument just upon a concatenation of syllables like that.
All right. And I'd just like to comment on one of the earlier callers, although you didn't say it. I think it's very interesting that people, when they speak about Hebrew without knowledge, will speak of the plural and the dual without knowledge of what the plural and the dual mean.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the fact of the matter is that dual doesn't mean just two, and it can mean more than just two, and plural doesn't mean that it's just three or more. It can actually refer to two. They're just not completely the same. And I'm sorry for wasting your time, Mike.
Preaching to the choir here.
Do you believe in the Bible code, Michael? Do you think there's something going on there?
No, I think that the whole idea, we should do a show on that sometime, but the whole idea of a Bible code is pretty much hopelessly flawed from the beginning, because what gets discussed as the Bible code today is based upon a specific edition of the Hebrew Bible, namely, like Michael Drosnin was working with the 1966 Koren edition. The letter sequence that's fed into the computer, it doesn't incorporate any Dead Sea Scroll material. It doesn't incorporate any different manuscript readings. You know, there are hundreds and hundreds of these manuscripts that have come down to us. And to arbitrarily pick one assemblage of the Hebrew Bible and ignore all the letter sequencing differences that there are in manuscripts, to me, just torpedoes the whole thing from the beginning.
Michael, my friend, the clock has got us. Keep in touch with me, all right?
All right, I will.
And let us know if you get all those people signed up so you can get that those documents analyzed.
Yeah, I will. And I know Rich Dolan's probably listening, too.
Okay. All right, great. For Steve Carr, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasur, Ross Mitchell, Alan Corbett, Stephanie Smith, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.